The WLEW, News and Public Affairs Department, now presents What Do You Think? Here is your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. It is currently about 11 minutes past 10 o'clock. Our guest today in the studio is April Schmidt, and we're going to be talking about the positive alternatives. It's for lack of a better way of saying it, and probably getting people thinking the wrong way, it's a crisis pregnancy center to help kids in crisis. And we're going to be talking, you have one in Caro, and you're going to be opening one in Bad Axe to cut down on travel time and help more kids and families deal with this. I want to thank you for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much, Craig. I'm just really pleased and honored to be here and kind of inform your listeners as to what is happening and how we hope to help the community.
Now, give us some background on the program. When people hear Crisis Pregnancy Center, they get one thing in mind, and it's probably not what you are. So,
right.
So let them know.
Yes, we are a crisis pregnancy center, and we're here to assist women who are facing an unwanted, unplanned, or at-risk pregnancy, look at all the options that are available to them, and prepare them for a positive life-affirming choice for themselves and their unborn baby. That's just kind of the beginning of what we do. And how that all starts is by offering the free self-administered pregnancy test to any woman who thinks that she may be pregnant. And she can just come into the office and do that test with one of our volunteer mentors and talk about her life situation and what she's facing.
And we talked a little before the program. You do not do any medical kind of treatments of any kind, any shape. You don't prescribe anything. You don't do that. You're basically counseling. The pregnancy test, self-administered, it's not part of the scheme of what you do.
Absolutely. We are not in any way a medical clinic. We do not have nurses who are operating under the, you know, their RN license. We don't have doctors in there. This is completely self-administered pregnancy test that the young ladies do the test. They're at the building with us with volunteers and mentors who have been trained in doing the test so that they have that person there that's kind of a support for them as they're going through that moment. They read the test as positive or negative, and then from that point we refer them on to where what their needs are based on their situation.
At that point, do you advise them to actually get a physician to verify this? Because home-type pregnancy tests, I don't know what kind you're using, but, you know, they're hit and miss now sometimes, and stress and all the other factors can change things.
Yes, and, you know, there's always that possibility of a false negative test also. The pregnancy tests that we use at our center are medical quality. So these are tests that if we were to get a CLIA waiver to be a certified lab, these are the types of urine tests that we would be using in that situation. So they're 99.8999% accurate, which is pretty accurate. But you know, things do happen. So we do encourage them then to follow up with their doctor for that confirmation of pregnancy and to begin their medical care.
Because as soon as you find out, then you've got to take care of all the prenatal care and nutrition and all the other things that go into having a successful pregnancy.
Absolutely. Early prenatal care is really key. And that's one of the things that we really work to educate the women that we serve about, is the earlier they get in and get that prenatal care started, the earlier that anything that could be a complication in their pregnancy can be addressed and taken care of. Like you say, from prenatal vitamins to basic nutrition information, looking for gestational diabetes and other things that could be harmful to both the mom and the baby.
Things they might be using because they're stressed out.
Yes, exactly. And that's part of what we educate them on as well in the options information time, as we talk about, you know, smoking and the increased risk of low birth weight and respiratory problems in infants. Drug use, that if they're on any medications, as soon as they find out they're pregnant, they should be contacting the prescription, the doctor that is prescribed, to find out what they should continue to use and if their prescription should be changed. So we're really there to advise them and direct them in the questions that they need to be asking.
people think of, you know, pregnancy crisis, they think of the big A abortion.
Right.
That's not the options you're pushing. You're more into the other A, the adoption, and the families finding a way to work the new member into the family in some way that works.
Exactly. We are a Christ-centered pro-life ministry. And so because of that Christ-centeredness of our center, we really believe that that adoption and parenting are the positive alternatives to abortion. Now, we do present abortion information to these young ladies, but what we do is we present medically accurate materials that have been provided to us through our national affiliate, CareNet, which tells them about all the risks that are associated with that. Because if a young lady is abortion-minded or abortion-vulnerable, she needs to be aware of what will happen to her if she does choose to have an abortion. But we do not tend to push one feeling of adoption or parenting over another. We really recognize the autonomy of each individual, that they have the freedom to choose what they want to do. We believe that any woman who's empowered with the right information and is educated on the choices can make a life-affirming choice for both herself and her unborn baby.
It would seem you couldn't determine what's best until you've spent some time with the person, with the family, to get the dynamics. Mm-hmm. Will this be feasible in the home? Is this something that you can see your trouble down the road and you got to nip that in the bud, because the whole benefit to this has to be for the unborn child.
Absolutely. And that is why the volunteer mentors that we have that have served in Kiro and the women that are ready to start serving here in Bad Axe have gone through some really intense training with me and some hands-on experience as well. And looking at their lives, asking them the right questions, the main question being, what would you want to do? Why would you want to do that? Or how do you see that working for you? How can we help? And what do you think best meets your situation? Getting that information from them, gathering that, so we can know which direction they're looking, so we can provide them with the most accurate information for their situation.
I know with a lot of government-funded programs, there's a confidentiality clause in there. How does that work with your organization? I'm sure when these young girls, and obviously the boys aren't going to be coming in thinking they're pregnant.
Right, although the boys do come with them occasionally, these concerned young men, which we always applaud those young men when they come in, because it shows that they're stepping up and that they're concerned for their girlfriend or their wife in some cases. So we applaud those men that come into the center. That's not an easy thing to do.
But do you assure them of confidentiality while you start the process until they're ready to talk with their parents on this? Because trust seems to me to be probably one of the most important things you have to foster right at the beginning.
Oh, absolutely. And when we begin the request for services intake with every client that comes in, we talk about the confidentiality issue. And we let them know before they give us any information that we may have to report some situations because of age or the threat to their life or the threat to somebody else's life, suicidal thoughts. We would want to get them help immediately in those areas. And I just want to clarify also, you said government agencies, and we are not a government agency.
But there's a difference between those, and I wanted to see how the confidentiality worked.
We provide that confidentiality to them. But again, we feel this moral obligation to a young lady who's underage, who's being abused in some way, to report that, because that is the right thing to do, to get her the help. We may be the only safe place that she has to tell somebody about what is happening in her life. And that's a huge burden of responsibility that we have. Because of that, we have an obligation to her well-being to step up and do something.
I understand that if the pregnancy resulted from sexual abuse, statutory rape, and such. Two 15-year-olds, can she at least come in and feel, I'll tell mom when I'm comfortable with it, that type of thing. Because,
encourage.
You know, there's a, you encourage them and you want to support them, but kids are scared and in this type of situation, and you really don't want to scare them off any further from getting the help they need early on to help the little one on the way.
Yes, and with two 15-year-olds, you have a completely different situation. You have two minors. And, you know, we cannot call their parents. We can't do that. We do encourage them right away to talk to their parents, that their parents are the biggest and the best support system that they're going to have in any crisis situation, whether it's pregnancy, whether they're in trouble at school, whatever it may be. Parents are always your best first option. I shouldn't say always, in the majority of cases.
Yeah, there's those exceptions.
Parents genuinely care for their children, with the exception of the few. Their parents want to help them. Their parents want to see them make good choices. The parents want to be that contact person for them. The majority of the people, the young women and men that we see in that age group, their parents are bringing them. So a lot of times the parents are already aware that something is going on. Maybe they've confronted them at home, and so then they're bringing them in to talk with us, which is a good thing, that their parents are looking for that support outside of the home from the beginning as well.
When kids are frightened like this, and we keep using kids, but you've told me before we came on the show that, you know, it's any pregnancy that was unwanted, unscheduled, and you know, a problem.
Yep.
That, you know, so it's any age, but we kind of seem to fall back to the kids.
Right.
But
we feel the most for the kids. We're most concerned about those teenagers. This morning I thought, you know, I'm going to look online real quick and see what the Michigan.gov website says about Huron County teen pregnancy statistics and abortion rates. And the latest numbers that are out are from 2010. The 2011 numbers won't be out until spring. So they're always almost 2 years behind in getting the numbers out to us. From the ages of 15 to 19 in Huron County in 2010, we had 26 pregnancies for 15 to 19-year-olds. For all age groups, there were 632, I believe, pregnancies overall. Now, of the teenage abortions that we had, we saw 9 abortions in 2010 for 15 to 19-year-olds. But 19 and above, there were 26. So you can see that even the majority of abortions that are happening in Huron County are not your teenagers, it's the older women. It's the women over 19. And so we're there to help them as well go through this information, the gathering information, understanding the risks of the procedures, understanding the short-term and long-term consequences that they go through, which are sometimes physical consequences, sometimes emotional and spiritual consequences, depending on where they're at in their emotional or spiritual development.
Do the kids often wait too long to come in for other options? You know, I mean, you get to a certain point and the others aren't viable anymore, and maybe that's one of the reasons the statistics are a little skewed to the older people, but it seems to be teenagers are, you know, like, you know, I'm going to ignore it, I'll talk about it tomorrow, I'm just going to hope it goes away, and then you're really into it, and you get to the point where you look down and there's no denying it.
Right. And I think that is true of some teenagers, that they tend to be procrastinators. We see more of the teenagers coming in already knowing that they're pregnant and looking for help and assistance, emotional support. We do more pregnancy tests with the 19 and older crowd, actually. That's the bulk of the pregnancy tests that we do, because they want to know immediately. They want to know right away. They want to deal with it. But you can see where that's the psychological development, you know, difference between a teenager and an adult is teenagers tend to put off until tomorrow what can be done tomorrow.
Or the next day.
Or the next day or next week.
Do you have to go beyond the house in your counseling? I mean, if they're 15, they're going to want to continue their education. And if it's a typical 9 months, part of that time some people in school are going to know.
Right.
You know, and maybe there are programs to help keep you caught up when your big day arrives and such, that, you know, because all of this needs to be planned in advance as opposed to just letting it all happen and hope it falls into place okay.
Mm-hmm. I know that in Kiro there are learning centers that the girls can go to, and it's kind of a self-study program. I have heard that Huron County also has a similar program, which I'm really looking forward to learning more about, because that is a great way to plug them in to get them to continue their education. We always want them to finish school, to graduate, to set goals. And that is part of what we do in the initial meetings that we have with them. We don't want to meet with them just one time, get them to choose life, and then say, thank you very much for coming. We want to build a relationship with them over the weeks and the months of their pregnancy and beyond, to be that continuing support system for them with education. So in those first weeks that they're coming, we're really focusing on some materials that we have called basic decision making, where they're looking at what were my goals before this happened to me, what do my goals look like now, and do they have to change, and how can I still reach them? The way that I get there may not be the same, but we want to show them that they can still get there. They can still get the high school diploma. They can still graduate from college. They can still have the family, the marriage, the career, that life is not over with a pregnancy. In fact, it's beginning a life. It might be a different direction than they thought, but it's still their life. And it comes down to what do I want my life to look like, and how am I going to get it to look that way?
Have we gotten past some of the old problems we used to have with, it was the little family secret, and it sent you off to stay with your aunt until, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, there was some shame in it before, and it happens. I mean, it's not what you want,
right.
And it's not, but, you know, it happens. It's happened in the past. It's going to happen in the future. There's no one walking the planet this date that's perfect, and kids are among the most imperfect at times.
Well, in fact, we're entering that Christmas season that reminds us that there was only one person that was born perfect, and he remained perfect, and that perfection was to perfect us. And we're grateful for that we had, you know, that Jesus came and did that for us. But many of these girls don't know that. And so they're making choices based on, this is the only life I have and there's nothing more for me. And, you know, that time of shame that you mentioned has really passed. That when I was in school, the girls who were pregnant in high school, they did everything they could do to cover it up. They wore the big baggy clothes and the giant sweatshirts, and they wore their boyfriend's varsity jacket to every class they had because it helped cover up a pregnancy. That's not the case now. It's very accepted that girls get pregnant. They're going to go to school.
But we have to make the distinction that it's accepted, but it's not preferred. It's not
exactly.
It's not something to aspire to. You know,
right.
Kids get the wrong idea sometimes. You know, oh, this person's getting all this attention. And, you know, we don't want to go the opposite direction either.
Absolutely. I so agree with that we have almost glorified it to have a baby out of wedlock, when it's just absolutely not the easy way to do it. Being a single parent is not easy. Being a teen mom is not easy. It's long, difficult hours. It's being the only one there to get up in the middle of the night. It's
an 18-year commitment, minimum lifetime if you're doing it right.
Exactly. And I think that they don't think beyond the moment, the pleasure moment that they're in. And when I do abstinence presentations to youth groups and to classrooms of kids, I tell them, when you become sexually active, you are telling me that you believe you are mature enough to handle the consequences that come with this sexual activity. that means that you think you are old enough and mature enough to parent a child for the rest of your life, or to handle having an infection that you may suffer from, that may cause cancer, that may lead to death, that could lead to a lifetime of pain and suffering. That when you make that choice of sexual activity, you're making the decision that you are responsible enough to take the consequences. And that makes them kind of sit back and think about it, that maybe I'm not ready for this. And if we could get them thinking about what will happen if I do this, maybe we could stop some of the crisis parts of the pregnancies. Maybe it would just be joyful pregnancies and not so much the crisis focus. That would be our ultimate goal.
Do the kids in this position have to speed up their maturity? They stop just thinking about what you'd like, what's good for you. You got to think about what's good for the child, what's good for the rest of your family. Maybe another mouth to feed just isn't practical at this time. Jobs are not falling off trees into anybody's lap anymore. You know, all of this type of stuff has to be. Do a lot of these kids have to go through a crash course in maturity?
Well, I think anybody who has a baby goes through a crash course in maturity. You know, I see it at all ages. I see it with not just the teenagers, but those college-age young people. I see it with married couples that have this ideal of what they think.
No more going out every Friday night to dinner and all this stuff. You've got to buy diapers. You've got to feed.
And pay the babysitter. And
well, and at first, you don't even want to leave the child with a babysitter. I mean, you know, you don't trust anyone.
Right, except maybe grandma, you know. But again, there's that shock. I don't know very many people that are completely prepared for it. And that is why we offer the parenting classes at the ministry, because that helps to equip them what to expect during their pregnancy, understanding about fetal development, understanding the three trimesters in a pregnancy and what is happening and the risks that are involved with each one of those trimesters, and getting the right type of care, looking for what should I be concerned about, what are the signs that I'm having problems in my pregnancy, so they can identify that and contact a doctor immediately if they're having physical symptoms that they should be concerned about. But beyond that, looking at newborn care, early childhood development. One of the things that it is so funny to me that I asked a young man, what is the one thing that you are most concerned about when the baby's born? And his big fear was the umbilical cord. Well, I understand we have to do special things to take care of the umbilical cord and it's going to fall off, and that kind of was freaking him out. And I said, well, let's do a video lesson on newborn care. Let's look at what this is going to be like. You'll be a little more prepared. And we did that with them as a couple. And he said, wow, that's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. Now, you know, just having that information and knowing what's going to happen just takes away so much fear and helps to be prepared. So it's the same with each level of development with a baby. What can I expect from a newborn? Well, you can expect a newborn to want to eat every 2 to 4 hours, that it's going to go through 10 wet diapers a day, that it's going to be up every 3 hours. It's not going to sleep, you know, from 9 o'clock at night until 7 o'clock in the morning. If you do, you are blessed with one of the world's best babies, because that's just not the normal.
And it's going to spit up on you. You're going to have to change the clothes a couple of times a day, because it isn't just like you with one set of clothes for the day. They tend to go through a lot of them.
Well, I sometimes have to change my clothes because, you know, the babies come in and they spit up on me, and I love that. I love that they bring their babies in to show us after they're born, and we get to play with them and talk with them and continue to encourage them and work with them and those issues that they face. And that's another really wonderful part of the program in the parenting class part, is that when they come in, we ask them, what are your concerns? What are you having a hard time with? What are you nervous about? And they tell us what that concern is. And then we look through the materials with them find a parenting class lesson that best fits the situation they're currently in and help them work through that situation. Whether it's potty training your three-year-old, if it is I can't get them to eat their vegetables, our volunteers really want to be there for them, for the relationship, for the long-term commitment with them, to be that encouragement. You know, postpartum depression is a huge issue.
And we know kids aren't moody.
And not at all. I don't know a moody teenager anywhere.
Parents might be hard-pressed to see any difference, but it will happen.
But it does happen, and it can happen. Postpartum depression can happen to any woman that's had a baby, not just teenagers, but older women as well. And so we help them and their parents or their spouse or boyfriend to identify those stressors that are involved with postpartum depression and encourage them to get the professional help that they need. We don't try to be professionals in those counseling situations. We just are working to identify where they need professionals and get them plugged into the right services that are out there for them.
We have a whole generation, and this isn't just teens, this is the young ladies as well, that are all so body image conscious. Gotta be skinny, the anorexia and bulimia levels way up there, all trying to meet this goal, and ain't going to happen when you're pregnant.
Right.
And you may not get it back when you're done. I mean, these are the realities of it. Do you have to sometimes do this type of counseling just to prepare them that it isn't going to be that way?
Yeah. And because we're not medical, we don't get into that part of it too much with them, but we do
feeling.
You know, yeah, how's your weight gain doing? How do you feel about that? We always tell them they look great, they look beautiful, they look healthy. Sometimes they tell us, I'm not gaining very much weight, the doctor is concerned, and then we encourage them to keep that relationship going with the doctor, to talk about the weight before and after the pregnancy, because after the pregnancy, it can be really depressing because they tend to think their bodies are going to bounce right back and they're going to look like the basketball star again. And that usually doesn't happen. And to just encourage them, you're looking good. You're exercising, walking, eating right. Keep doing that. It'll happen.
Because all of these stresses, if you don't address them, affect the child
inside. Absolutely. And not just prenatally, but after the fact, it affects how she feels about the baby. If she
is emotionally... Don't want her blaming the child because
right.
I'm not, you know, down to 5% body fat again. Yeah.
We want her to emotionally bond with the baby in pregnancy. It makes it easier to bond with the baby more after the baby's there. So singing songs, reading books during pregnancy out loud. The baby is learning mom's voice. And when the baby's born, he or she, mom starts to talk, and that baby will immediately after birth turn its head to see mom because they have already recognized that young lady or that adult woman as their mom because they know their voice.
Sort of an imprint.
It is a huge imprint, and it's a joyful thing. And when we talk to them about that in the second trimester, third trimester, to keep encouraging that, and I had one young lady that said, I just don't know if that's true. And I said, just do it as an experiment, just do it. And after the baby was born, she came into the office and said, April, you wouldn't believe it, but I did that. Right after the baby was born, I started talking to her, and immediately she looked at me, and I knew that she knew who I was. And that is powerful. That's powerful. In that moment, she loved that baby. And she knew that her baby loved her. And that's just, you just can't beat that.
Now, we've talked a lot about, you know, how to get the family together and support and around this, but sometimes that isn't the best route, and adoption is the way, perhaps, to go. You also help them in that process, as I understand it,
we
in
do.
Actually finding good places to go through, and because you don't do them yourselves, obviously,
right.
but good places to go through, and you mentioned there's several different types of adoptions these days.
Yes, we are not an adoption agency, but we do have referrals to different types of adoption agencies that are out there, whether it's through a licensed attorney, through social services, or through a private adoption agency. We can line them up with that if that's what they're interested in. Like I mentioned, basic decision making earlier, we also have workbooks that are designed to walk them through, is parenting for me now? And what about adoption? And understanding what adoption is and what adoption isn't. So that if they're leaning in that direction or feel strongly about it one way or another, they at least have the information about it and can move forward from there. So different types of adoptions that are out there now are open adoption, which has now been around for quite a few years. Open adoption is where through an adoption agency or an attorney, they can find adoptive parents. And the birth parents get to choose the home that the baby goes into.
They're still giving up their parental rights,
yes,
to the adoptive parents. So we don't want you to think that, you know, this is just alone until I'm on my feet.
Right.
This is a permanent thing.
It's not foster care. This is a permanent situation.
And that has to be explained to a teenager, I'm sure, several
exactly.
different ways till Sunday.
Exactly. And once they have decided to look at really making an adoption plan, we turn them over to the adoption agencies. Of the adoption agency of their choice, and they begin to work with the agency. The agency walks them through all of the legal processes. We're not involved with that at all. But that's the beautiful thing about open adoption, is that in their mind, they can see that this child is in a loving, caring home, the home that they would want their child to be in. So,
and it gives the adoptive parents an idea of the health background of the family the child is coming from, to know if there's genetic or congenital problems that may crop up in the future. At least they've got some warning, and they have an idea.
Right. And if there are problems in the future, they can go back and find if they need, you know,
family history.
Absolutely. And many families that I know personally that have either adopted through open adoption or released in an open adoption situation receive annual reports from the adoptive family, where they get pictures, they get report cards. Sometimes the birth mom will send a gift on the birthday or at Christmas for the baby. It's not typical that they have visits, but that's all negotiable between the two families.
That has to be agreed on by all parties involved.
Yes,
it's nothing the court can stipulate, you know, for the adoption. This has to be agreed upon because it's just too important not
right.
to.
And a few people today still choose closed adoption because they don't want to know. Because maybe it was a traumatic event for them to become pregnant, and so they want to release the baby, and they are confident that the baby's going into a good home, and they're at peace with that. So it's all about personal preference and where you're at emotionally and spiritually with the release of a baby into adoption. It really is the bravest thing that a birth mom could ever do, is release a baby into adoption. And, you know, birth moms should be applauded because it is the most selfless thing that they could do. It's, you know, often they reject adoption because they think, well, I got myself in this situation, now I have to be responsible. I need to be responsible for this choice. Well, you can be responsible for the choices that you made by releasing for adoption as well. That's a mature decision to make. Not an easy one, but a mature decision.
And the adoption procedure also gives the biological father some input in this as well.
Absolutely.
They're not out of the picture as they tried to do in the past.
Absolutely. The birth father must be involved, and he must agree to have his rights signed off. He signs off his rights. In some extreme cases, his rights are removed depending on what the situation was with the pregnancy and the young woman involved.
Obviously, in our time frame, we can't go over all the the different problems that can happen, all the different situations, but you have materials through your ministry that will address them.
Yes.
And if people are interested, you've got an office operating in Caro, and you've got one soon in Bad Axe. How do they get a hold of the Caro office if they need help now, and where will the Bad Axe office be in the near future?
Well, the Bad Axe office is actually just down from the radio station where we are right now, across from the hospital here on M53. The address there is 1037 South Van Dyke in Bad Axe. You can call us at 989-269-6760 if you would like to volunteer to be a mentor, if you have donations that you would like to drop off, or if you have need of our services. We're answering the phone now at that office. You can call and make an appointment. We're almost done with the building. We hope to be open and having services offered within the next couple weeks. And as soon as that happens, we will have a press release out so that everybody will know that we're there. And we will be hosting an open house in January so that people can come and check us out.
Now, if you want to volunteer, you're dealing sometimes with minor children. Does there have to be some sort of background checks involved in this? Because, mm-hmm. A, you're going to want to know that the people that are volunteering are on board with the philosophies of your organization. But, B, you also want to make sure that the kids are safe.
Absolutely. We do that. We get references from them. I get their information. We do background. We look at the background information and make sure that the women and families that we're serving are safe when they're in our presence.
Because that's one of the biggest factors, that they need to feel safe somewhere.
Absolutely. And we're there for them. We want them to know that.
Well, I appreciate you taking time with us today. Again, if they want information or to volunteer in Bad Axe, 269-6760. I imagine you'll be closed for Thanksgiving, but
yes.
Next Monday you'll probably start again.
We'll be answering the phone.
Is it like a 24-hour hotline type of thing?
Well, it is. The phone number is call forwarded to my personal cell phone number, so if they want to talk to me, they can call that number and chat with me, and I'd be happy to give them more information.
And if they want to volunteer, get them on the process. If they need help, get them over to Caro if they need it immediately, and can't wait the 2-3 weeks for Bad Axe to open.
It will be great. We're really looking forward to it.
Thanks for taking time with us today.
Thank you, Craig.
Our guest today on the program has been April Schmidt, and she's with Positive Alternatives. They're opening an office in Bad Axe near the hospital, 1037 South Van Dyke. Again, that number 269-6760 if you want to volunteer, if you have questions, or if you need services. I do want you to stay tuned. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.